Welcome to Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm health integrationist Lena Berman, and I come to you weekly with a critical, independent voice on the politics and practice of health. Blood sugar derangement. Is it a disease or symptom of something deeper? For conventional medicine, it's called diabetes if your blood sugar gets above a prescribed level. But type 2 diabetes is called diabetes mellitus, which means diabetes passing lots of urine, and mellitus, sweet. So, sweet urine, not sweet blood. This has been the most common form of diabetes. Type 1 diabetes is an autoimmune disease where the insulin-making beta cells in the pancreas are attacked by antibodies. Still, sweet blood or sweet urine, it means that something's going on. So why is it that it's never really explained? Why does blood sugar get higher, and why does sugar appear in the urine? Stay tuned for this hour's discussion about the actual physical mechanisms behind the symptoms described as diabetes, and how you can prevent and treat these symptoms without resorting to treating a disease. I'm joined, as always, by Jeff Fawcett, PhD, an environmental or political economist, writer and health educator, my co-producer and co-host, and co-author of the upcoming book, Too Much Medicine, Not Enough Health. Before we start on our topic, blood sugar, I want to just say a very brief word about the flu. I think I'm going to say things that you all know, but I still think it's worth reminding you of these things, even so. The susceptibility to having the flu is based on how your immune system's working, but everybody's immune system can be knocked out by unusual amounts of stress, which can include extreme temperature changes where you're getting hot and cold, but it mostly includes too much stress, whether it's just stress from working too much or over-exercising or being exhausted and not sleeping well, without enough recovery. It's the recovery that makes your ability to withstand a flu or resist a flu. It's the recovery. Obviously, there's some nutrient density involved, and it never hurts to take some extra vitamin C, selenium, zinc, vitamin A. There are homeopathic flu remedies that work nicely. There are antiviral herbs. St. John's Wort is an antiviral, so is black elderberry. But the primary thing is to not get up with a flu and go to work. Now, I understand that in tough economic times, people are afraid of losing their jobs, so they don't stay home when they're sick. But that is the best way to have a pandemic appear among groups of people, is for people who are sick to go out, drive around, breathe on people, handle money, touch people, touch things, and give other people the flu. So please, all of you, if you're worried about a flu pandemic, stay home when you're sick, baby yourself, and think about the rest of us. Now to our topic, which is blood sugars. And a brief thanks to Malcolm Kendrick, MD, a UK doc, who unpacked this information with a new view. We're fans of his, and we think similarly to him. He kind of echoes our own thoughts. His writings can be found on a website that is the requisite W's, and then thincks.org.
No. It's just thincks. Thinks.
That's what I just said.
You put a K in there.
thincks.org. Right. Thinks.org with a C, not a K. So what we're going to talk about to begin with is that there is a primary misunderstanding in our view. We have a different view of how this works than what we read in conventional literature. Our view is that this is not a disease, that it is a problem with energy metabolism, with fat metabolism, deposition and transport, and blood sugar derangement is a symptom, along with increased amounts of fat around visceral fat, so truncal, around your midsection, and usually high blood pressure. These are symptoms of a metabolic and energy metabolism derangement. it has very little to do with the symptom blood sugar. The blood sugar symptom can, I'm not saying that having high blood sugars is fine, that if your blood sugars are between 2 and 300 all the time, that you shouldn't worry about it. What I'm saying is that that is a warning sign that something else is going on, and that focusing on the blood sugar itself is wrong-headed, and we will begin to give you a sense of this. So to begin with, what I'd like to do is have Jeff, Dr. Fawcett, talk about what is going on, what should be happening in our energy metabolism, what happens when energy metabolism and fat metabolism become deranged.
Thank you. I want to reinforce and actually quote from Malcolm and repeat from a what Lena just said in terms of the conventional view of what happens with people who are diagnosed with diabetes and our view of what is actually going on. The standard view is that is really dominant now, is you eat too much, you don't get enough exercise, you get fat, you get insulin resistant, you get high blood sugars, you get type 2 diabetes. That's the progression. And that is widely accepted in the conventional medical literature. What we're arguing is that Dr. Kendrick puts it, some factor, some more fundamental metabolic disruption, causes insulin resistance in muscle and liver. That's followed by deranged energy metabolism, which is just
insulin resistance means that your tissues don't respond well to the messenger that insulin is. It's a hormone.
Correct.
That's a messenger.
Right. That will come in a moment. Following the deranged energy metabolism, inappropriate fat deposition in what's sometimes called truncal fat or visceral fat, which is distinct from subcutaneous fat, that's fat that's underneath the skin, followed by raised blood sugars. So our argument is that, for instance, hypertension, a symptom, high blood sugar, is being treated as a disease. And so all the focus of treatment comes hurtling at pounding down that symptom without actually evaluating what the underlying cause of that symptom is. It's as if you were treating a flu simply by trying to reduce the fever.
Oh, that happens.
but focused simply on the fever. The fever is a symptom, and in fact, it's your body trying to take care of itself. Anyway, so deranged metabolism, insulin resistance, let's start there. Insulin resistance, ordinarily, insulin is a good player in what your energy metabolism does. You eat carbohydrates, you eat fats, and proteins are counted as energy sources. But in fact, in terms of what your body does with it, the basic sources of energy in your body are glucose, blood sugar, and fatty acids, which come from carbohydrates, starches, and sugars in your diet, and dietary fats. Ordinarily, what happens with virtually all carbohydrates is your liver turns carbohydrates into fats and wants to store them, because mostly what you use in terms of energy, even resting energy when you're watching a movie or listening to music or simply relaxing, is you're burning fat. And in particular, what your body does is turn carbohydrate, glucose, blood sugar, into saturated fat, and then stores it in adipose tissue, that is, in fat cells. When you need energy, what your body does is when it needs to accelerate, it uses glucose, because glucose produces energy very quickly. And it produces that in the cells in little, what are called organelles, which you can think of them as little organs in each cell, called mitochondria. And it turns that that glucose burn or not, it doesn't burn it. It turns it into a little energy cell, a little energy molecule called ATP, which is what cells actually use for energy. ATP is also used through what's called oxidative respiration. That is, you breathe in oxygen and fatty acids are combined with the oxygen, and oxygen is highly reactive, and that produces ATP as well.
Otherwise known as aerobic exercise.
Also known as aerobic exercise. It's why you breathe. It's why oxygen is a good thing for you. And when that all works smoothly, you have a nice even ebb and flow of glucose and fatty acids through your bloodstream to and from your liver and your fat cells and to your muscle, which, by the way, you also store energy in your liver and in your muscle, but there's limits to that. When we get the imbalance from that cascade from insulin resistance to the derangement of the energy derangement, what's kicked out of balance is the actual flow of blood sugars through your system, so that your liver doesn't quite know what's going on. Are we burning blood sugar now? Are we burning fatty acids? All the signals are very wrong. And so what happens is it's not just blood sugars that go up. It's also the fatty acids that are flowing through your system. So your energy metabolism is kind of a flood with these sources of energy. And in response, your pancreas, which is close to the liver and your stomach and all those other digestive things, produces insulin, which is the key that opens cells to the uptake of glucose. But insulin also does other things. It also signals fat cells to take up fatty acids to store fatty acids, and it also signals them to convert proteins into energy when you have to. The model for what goes wrong is the type 1 diabetic, who cannot take up, because there's no insulin there, can't take up any blood sugar at all. It can't relieve the system at all. So what the cells try to do in surviving is they turn principally fatty acids and proteins into what are called ketone bodies. Ketones are a chemical which are acidic. When you're only running on ketones, what happens is your cells become highly acidic, and it overwhelms your body's capacity to neutralize that acid, and eventually the untreated type 1 diabetic will die from what's called ketoacidosis. Now, basically, their system becomes too acid and they can't survive. So that is kind of the path that energy derangement follows in this course to the diagnosis of diabetes.
Okay, so I'm going to ask you some questions because there were some things that I didn't get from what you were saying, but a couple of things. Mostly, maybe let me ask that first. You're saying that the energy derangement occurs when insulin is unable to do its job properly, to
right.
signal the transport of glucose through the body. So the body then is forced to do something strange, and the blood sugar gets too high because it's not being used properly in the energy cycle. Is that what you're saying?
That's right.
Simplistically?
Simplistically,
yeah.
Yes.
The other thing is that that I would bring in is that our preferred energy use, the body's preferred energy use, contrary to what people believe, is fat, not sugar. Sugar is kind of a kindling for aerobic energy. Now, when you're doing something very strenuous, if you're out in the garden and you're working very hard and you're carrying heavy things, or you're weightlifting, for instance, training with weights, something very peak performance where you're kind of getting out of breath, you're burning sugar. And you have a limited amount of that to work with. You have maybe an hour and a half to 2 hours worth in your muscles and in your liver. After you run out, you hit the wall, basically. What happens when you're doing exercise that is milder and you're not out of breath and you're fit, you know, you've been walking or you've been running and you've gotten kind of fit so that your respiration changes a little bit, you're not totally out of breath, you can still talk, it means that you're burning fat as a fuel, and you can do that for a long time. Now, what's interesting here is that when people overexercise, they actually do damage to their energy metabolism, because they do hit the wall and they aren't able, they force themselves to go through a certain thing where they're using sugar as fuel and inefficiently. One of the things I've noticed is that people who overtrain tend to have weight gain in the trunk. When they gain weight, they gain it in the belly, and that's one of the reasons they're so concerned about exercising so much. And they're also very attracted to sugar and starch, because it gives them quick energy. But it messes up their energy metabolism, and you'll notice that these people will not have, not talking generally, I mean, because people vary, but very often won't have enough muscle. And you'd think it's because they're running long distances, but it's partly because their energy metabolism is under stress. And under stress, your body flips into this deranged energy metabolism where it can't control the blood sugars properly, and you're burning sugar all the time instead of burning fat. Now, one of the problems with this is the issue with the ketones, and another place where you see this happen is with not only peak performance athletes who are pushing through their energy storages and continuing to go on and then maybe not getting enough rest in to boot, or not replenishing with enough protein and fat, but with sugar, is people who don't eat frequently enough, people who skip breakfast, who never get their energy metabolism going in the morning, which is a good way to gain weight, or people who skip meals and are very proud of themselves for having one meal a day or whatever because they think it keeps their weight down. But instead, what happens is that it signals the body that you're starving, and your brain is the only place in your body that it's the only part that has to have sugar to run. This doesn't mean that you have to eat sugar for your brain. It means that your brain is going to get the sugar first. So if you're eating a diet that isn't full of sugar so that your blood sugars are staying quiet, then it has to use the sugar, you know, that it breaks down from the fat and protein that you're eating. It has to go to the brain. And if you starve the brain, or you're relying so heavily on sugar for energy metabolism, the brain's not getting a proper amount, you will have ketones. Now, ketones often make people feel slightly high. They have this wonderful sense of, people say that when they're fasting, they feel this delicious feeling. Part of what they're feeling is a sort of high from the ketones. But the ketones are acidifying your blood and sort of unbalancing your energy metabolism. You can smell it on people's breath, ketones. It's an unmistakable smell, and it is not healthy energy metabolism, and it does damage in the long run. Do you want to explain why? Or you had something else that you wanted to say?
My brain was somewhere else. Well, what I was going to I think it's useful to kind of come back to this issue of where does this process start and what's it all about, which is to ask the question, as I said, in our view, as opposed to the conventional view, that the starting place is the insulin resistance to muscle and the liver. And the question for us to ask is, why would the body do that?
Thank you. That's a good question. Because the body does everything for a reason.
And the answer is, if you are under stress, all of the things that happen under with insulin resistance make perfect sense. That that you want to increase, and under stress, you're going to increase the amount of glucose that's in your bloodstream because you're going to get out of there as fast as possible. You're going to be burning energy, not storing it, which is what insulin is for. So this makes perfect sense that if you are under stress, and think of stress in the widest possible fashion, not just psychological stress. Oh, my boss yelled at me today, but being poverty,
chronic
stress from both social and psychological situations, but also from physical assaults from, for instance, pollutants in the environment. So what we're arguing is what's fundamentally at work here is stress of all kinds, that is, in a sense, raising the waterline so that more and more people are below the waterline in terms of reacting to those stressful situations with all the things that we know about the classic stress response.
And you can actually see this when you're out in public by noticing how many people have extra fat around their belly, their abdomen. How many people have extra abdominal fat now? It's kind of common to see even people who are relatively slender have large bellies. And this is not, it's good that sociologically we've gotten less fat phobic, but what we're talking about is the deposition on the body of energy storage, which has to do with how healthy the body's energy storage or metabolism is. People who have good energy storage will gain weight all over their bodies, not only in one spot like that. Just want to let you know you're listening to Your Own Health and Fitness. It's Lena Berman with Jeff Fawcett, PhD, and we're discussing blood sugar and basically energy metabolism derangement according to us. And we are basing our information on research, but also on physiology, which is one of the things that I noticed that both of us are very confounded when we read conventional literature about diabetes, because it's as if they completely are missing the point. They're stressing this issue of blood sugars, and there's all kinds of information about blood sugars that we don't know. And in fact, there are some studies coming out now that, and there's been articles in the paper, that show that if you over medicate people and you force down their blood sugars too low, that people die sooner and end up with things like dementia and things like that. There was a recent study that was published in JAMA, April 15th in 2009, hypoglycemic hypo low blood sugar episodes and risk of dementia in older patients with type 2 diabetes mellitus. So what they found was among older patients with type 2, a history of severe hypoglycemic episodes was associated with a greater risk of dementia. So if you over-lower people's blood sugars for, you know, using drugs, although drugs do tend to stop working well as you get older. But anyway, the point is that we don't actually know what the effects of having moderately elevated blood sugars are if somebody is taking really good care of themselves. And if you can look at them and see that their energy metabolism is working, there are many ways to tell. We don't know, but we do know what happens if somebody has deranged energy metabolism, a symptom of which is high blood sugar, because there are other symptoms that go along with it. Now, there are many downstream effects of a deranged energy metabolism, and I want to go to that. But before I say that, well, no, that's getting into the stress argument. Okay, so the downstream effects, as we know, are the visceral fat, the high blood pressure, which is a blood sugar derangement. It's an energy metabolism derangement. It's a stress response. But there are other downstream effects, and there's a long list, and I'll just list them quickly. I don't want you to get stuck on them, but you see risk increases for dementia, for heart attacks. You end up with high blood fats, which is not cholesterol. It's triglycerides. If you see triglycerides get above 100, you're headed in the bad direction. LDL cholesterol, which is not a bad player, but cholesterol is a very complicated case, but we will see an elevated LDL, a highly elevated LDL with a low HDL. We see more cancer. We see retinopathy, neuropathy, nephropathy, which is the eyes, the nerve endings, and the kidneys, gangrene, lots of inflammation, and very much hormonal imbalances, so a loss of metabolic balance. There's also something that happens as a result of the high sugar. The sugar being really high for a long time causes the production of something called glycation end products, which ages the tissues. So we do know that if people's blood sugars are really nastily high, like 200 to 300, and they stay there or above for long periods of time, we see these downstream effects. So do you want to, Jeffrey, do you want to talk a bit about, since we're saying that blood sugars in and of themselves may not be the problem, do we understand, do you have a sense, do you want to say something about these downstream effects and why that happens?
Yeah, I think it was you interviewed Ron Rosedale long ago, and he characterized diabetes as a disease of accelerated aging. Mm-hmm. And in fact, the acronym cleverly alludes to that, advanced glycation end products. Essentially, what these are is glucose, blood sugar, reacting with proteins. And it's not a simple step from one to the other, but it happens all over the body. And some of the nasty byproducts or so-called metabolites of these include the amyloid plaques that are associated with Alzheimer's disease, for example. But it also causes a number of quite a variety of bad outcomes in the tissues of the body, causing dysfunction in them. But the essential thing to understand about what's happening with AGEs, with these glycation products, is they're a natural part of our cellular metabolism. They're going on all the time, and they are cleared from our system through enzymes breaking them down and are excreting them in our urine. It happens all the time. What happens when the system gets overloaded with too much glucose is the process, remember the mitochondria that produce energy? This is another aspect of the deranged energy metabolism, that system gets backed up and overwhelmed and eventually can't clear all of those glycation products, and so they accumulate and start reacting with other tissues, and so then we have to rely on things like our capacity for producing antioxidants to clear those products and their metabolites from our system. So it's kind of part and parcel of diabetes as a diagnosis being accelerated aging, which is, in a very simplistic way, a product of oxidative stress. So this is an aspect of that oxidative stress that ages tissues too rapidly.
So the way that I understood glycated end products is that they are kind of like a caramelization, kind of a sugary caramelization.
Yeah, when I was reading about this, I came across that this is a kind of horrifying experiment. They did an experiment in which they took egg whites, put sugar in them, heated them up, because AGEs are produced exogenously by combining sugars with outside. You can
outside.
Eat stuff that has AGEs in them.
Okay.
So what they did is these experimenters cooked some egg whites with sugar in them and gave it to diabetics, and their AGEs went up 200 times. 200 times, not 200%, 200 times.
That's nice. So what happens is that these glycation end products cause the tissues to become stiff and brittle, and so this is part of what causes the blood pressure to go up. Is that not right? Causes stiffening.
That's a piece of it, because these things react all over the place. They react in cells. They also react in the stiffening part has to do with the reactions in what's called the cellular matrix, which is mm-hmm. the collagen that basically holds cells together. So when too much sugar is around, the collagen, which is basically a protein, gets gummed up and becomes stiff, and that also affects it affects the linings of blood vessels as well. So it stiffens everything up.
We're going to have to stop for a brief break. You're listening to Your Own Health and Fitness with Lena Berman and Jeff Fawcett, PhD. We're talking about blood sugar or energy metabolism derangement. If you will please stay with us, we'll be back after this break. Welcome back. This is Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm Lena Berman with Jeff Fawcett, PhD. We're doing a show today about blood sugar. And I want to remind you that there's information about Your Own Health and Fitness, our guests, our practice, free stream of this week's show, CD copies, and lots more at yourownhealthandfitness.org. Our information number is 707-874-2772. So there's been this focus on blood sugars, and we're not saying that blood sugars as a symptom should be ignored. We're saying that blood sugars as a symptom are one of many symptoms and are equal in value, and that going after the blood sugar alone is imprudent and doesn't work well. And we know this because of studies that have shown that if you give people lots of drugs to aggressively lower their blood sugars, I said, it sometimes causes them to have dementia. It also causes them to feel poorly. It also doesn't work. And we do know that exercise and dietary changes, where you control the amount of blood sugar by eating foods that don't provoke blood sugar, makes people feel better, but and we'll go back over the things that make people feel better.
One of the interesting studies I came across some time ago when I was looking into this issue was a study that looked at, that compared aggressive blood sugar control with kind of normal blood sugar control among diabetes. And what was clear from the study was that although in some absolute sense blood sugars were lower, the disease progressed at the same rate. That is,
oh, that's interesting.
It didn't matter whether you aggressively controlled it or just controlled the blood sugars. And in prepping the show, I came across an interesting an article that talks to this issue. Well, talks to a number of issues, but talks to the issue of this being a stress response. It's been known for some time that that diabetes and depression are associated with one another, that diabetics are more likely to be depressive than normal glucose level folks. So there's a study from, I think it was last year in JAMA, that reported on, that looked at chicken or egg kind of thing. What's the association between depression and diabetes? So they took essentially what they looked at was people who were depressive but weren't diabetic, and then people who were diabetic but not depressive, and looked at them over about 4 years. And the people who were depressed were more likely to become diabetic than people who were not. But the other way around didn't work. That is, someone who was diabetic was not particularly likely to become depressed unless you were heavily treated to control the blood sugars. And then it really shot up.
Mm. Well, your fat is fat in your diet. Well, anyway.
Well, there's
also, it's a whole thing.
There's all sorts of things.
Okay. So, but what you've just pointed out is you've just brought up another symptom, which is depression. And depression, please, if you might, mm-hmm. if I could just, depression is both of us see this in our practice, but what I see commonly in my practice among people with blood sugar problems and metabolism problems with their metabolism, and a range of symptoms in women. It's going to be lots of hormonal imbalances, lots of problems with their hormones because of what happens with the cortisol, the stress hormones and stuff. But is that I see a lot of thyroid problems among diabetics. And thyroid is the most common underlying cause for depression, untreated thyroid. And it's amazing how physicians miss this. They under-test the thyroid. They only do a TSH, which doesn't tell you enough. It's the T3, the free levels of T3, that will let you know whether or not somebody's getting enough of the T3 to prevent depression. And hormonal imbalances, and these are also concomitant with diabetes, because diabetes as a metabolism derangement or metabolic derangement causes changes in the other sex hormones. We've talked about this in hormone shows where the blood sugar and the insulin levels, the insulin is too high, and this causes the testosterone in men to get really low, and it causes a lot of belly fat in women. It causes them to not have enough progesterone. They start having horrible periods. They get acne and polycystic ovaries. So depression is yet another symptom of all of these things, and it gives us a clue that maybe other things are going on under the surface that you're not aware of. Going back to how we know that this is caused by probably stress and not specifically obesity and blood sugars, there are some common mythologies about its causes, like obesity. Like you said at the top of the show, if you get fat, you're going to get type 2 diabetes. Well, okay, that's not true. I mean, for instance, sumo wrestlers are not diabetic. They're just not. And people who have a particular disease, it's a rather uncommon disease called Bernardinelli sep. It's I can spell it, but you're not going to. It's, you can look it up if you want. It's Bernardinelli. So it's like Bernard without an N, Bernard in Ellie, and then dash S-E-I-P. Bernardinelli sep is a rare disease in which people have no fat at all, and they have a world of problems. Just the opposite of what you would expect. Instead of having no diabetes and having no problems,
100%.
They have 100% diabetes. So do you want to talk about Bernardinelli sep briefly?
Well, Dr. Kendrick uses this as an example of how the conventional view that the progression is eat too much, no exercise, get obese, get blah, 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 blah. He says, well, here's a class of people who are 100% diabetic. Blood sugar derangement or energy metabolism.
They
deranged.
All have it. Mm-hmm.
They all have it. They cannot. They cannot store fat. They have no body fat.
So why does this? So what's important here is that there's a very important message here about how wonderful our energy metabolism is. Because what we learned studying these people is that fat storage is energy storage, and it's important. It isn't the case that you should have no fat on your body. If you don't have fat storage on your body for your body to use under stress, then the energy cycle becomes disruptive and harmful. So these people end up making all kinds of blood sugar, and they end up spilling it in their urine, and they have they actually die from ketone acidosis, don't they?
What?
Or something kills them finally. Anyway, it's not a good moment. But if they control the diet, yeah.
Yeah. Well, one way to look at this is that it's kind of a mirror image with fats that you have with insulin resistance and elevated blood sugars. That the body doesn't know what to do with the blood sugars, and oh my goodness, that's diabetes. Well, this is kind of the flip side of that disrupted energy metabolism. It's fundamentally about the deranged energy metabolism, not that you've got too much either fat in your blood or blood sugar. And it's that your energy metabolism is is screwed up.
So these people have a lot of trouble, but they do better if they're given a diet that keeps... One of the problems is that they're hungry all the time,
yes,
so they, and
right.
they can't. So what happens is that they have to eat foods that give them a lot of satiety, so a lot of fat, which you can't make blood sugar.
Yeah, my recollection, too, is there's a therapy, because they don't have any fat cells, they're not producing leptin, so their brain isn't getting a signal that they're satisfied, so they supplement that hormone, leptin.
Yeah, they also suffer from a lot of edema. They get swollen from eating starches and sugars, which everybody does, incidentally. It's just it's more obvious in this case. All right, so we also know that, and the sumo wrestlers have subcutaneous fat. They're not gaining it all in the belly. They're gaining it everywhere.
They have it everywhere.
Everywhere. And they have a lot of muscle, too. So in terms of how it is that stress, aside from the fact that a high blood sugar is a fight-or-flight response, we also know from looking at diseases where the catecholamines or stress hormones get very high, and these people all suffer. Because if you actually find a disease, instead of making up a disease and calling it diabetes from these symptoms, if you find people who actually have diseases that cause too much stress hormones, you will also discover that these people have high blood sugars too. So Cushing's disease, which is a disease where you're producing too much cortisol, phachromocytoma, which is spelled P-H-A-E, chromocytoma, is where you have too much adrenaline and epinephrine. These are the two early stress hormones that come in before cortisol. If you use steroids, so if you're using glucocorticoid steroids, if you're using fake cortisol, cortisone, and things like that, and other steroid hormones, that creates a situation with too much cortisol and too many steroid hormones. That produces high blood sugar. So that's one of the problems with using steroids. Obviously, an acute trauma, you produce lots of cortisol, adrenaline, epinephrine, and your blood sugars go up. Acromegaly has high blood sugars, too much growth hormone. These are the people that are giants. And type 1 diabetes, where there's no insulin, so there's this odd hormonal problem. These are actual diseases where we see the blood sugar goes up. If you treat the actual disease, if you get rid of the too much cortisol because of whatever's causing, you know, the Cushing's, if you get to the thing and you've been, or you stop using the steroids, or you recover from the trauma, various things like that, the blood sugar will normalize.
Now, one interesting thing about these diseases as well that Dr. Kendrick points out is that the list of symptoms, not just the high blood sugars, but the other list of symptoms that are common to all of them is also common to diabetes, and what is going on with all of them is that they induce a stress response, high cortisol.
Yeah, when you have too many glucocorticoid steroids or catecholamines, yeah, you'll end up with high blood sugars. Now, another cause for all of this. So we have the eke factor. We have social stress. We have psychological stress and trauma. We have people living in poverty. We have more and more of those every day. And then we have environmental pollution. And it turns out that dioxin is one of the major causes for people to get diabetes. The other one is persistent organic pollutants.
Pops.
Wrote pops and then forgot what the last P was. Persistent organic pollutants. So pesticides and all the rest of it. Now,
not surprisingly, the researcher who did that looked at research also published a paper that used kind of the same data set to identify an association between exposures to POPs, or actually body burden of persistent pollutants, with behavioral and mental health disorder, you know, stressful mental health disorders. Again, stress response.
So let's talk for a moment about dioxin, because we just recently got emailed another study that said if you eat meat, you're going to have all these dioxins in your body because of the fat. So if you just are a vegetarian, you haven't got a problem. Well, the problem is that the dioxin is not only in the animals, it's in us. And I don't think anybody's done a study that shows that vegetable oils don't have dioxin. And fat, if you don't eat any fat, if you just say, okay, no fat, no dioxin, no fat, well, it's not, that doesn't work either, because there have been body burden studies on people who are in areas where they're eating sort of vegetarian low-fat diets, and they're just chock-a-block full of dioxins. And the problem here is you've got these environmental pollutants, and yes, you can eat organically, and you can go for grass-fed, and you can do all these various things to reduce the number of POPs and dioxin and fluorines and all these things. But unless your detoxification pathways are working, you're out of luck. And your detoxification pathways are dependent on, as I've said so many times, sulfur-containing amino acids, which are in animal proteins. If you feel very strongly that you don't want to eat animals, you should still have, if you can tolerate them, if you're not allergic, some dairy fats and dairy. And the fats, because you can't use any of your fat-soluble vitamins, many of which are antioxidants, which will help your detoxification work. So there's a balance act between what goes in and how much goes out. And what goes out is dependent on your liver working, which is dependent on glutathione being produced from raw material in your body, which is from sulfur-containing aminos. So eschewing meat is not going to protect you from dioxins. Becoming political and fighting with the public health industry and letting Obama know what you want and various other things like that might do some help down the line. But, you know, we went to the Goldman Environmental Awards and were very amazed by the activities of these grassroots people all over the world, some of them without even telephones to work with, who were able to mobilize a community and stop an assault on their environment. I mean, just astonishing. So anybody can do it. You don't have to be some kind of special person. So I just want to remind you, you're listening to Your Own Health and Fitness. This is Lena Berman and Jeff Fawcett, PhD, talking about blood sugars. I think that we've given you enough information to indicate that the heart disease in metabolic syndrome, all these other things, and the hormonal changes are because of the high amounts of glucocorticoid steroids, the high cortisol, the high catecholamines, the changes from the blood sugars of the stiffening of the arteries, which you can mediate sometimes with using fish oils and things like that. But the point is to decrease the amount of inflammation in the body and decrease the amount of glycation end products, which means that there are some things that you might want to do. And we're going to go over some of them, but all of these suggestions, we've been accused of giving out too many factoids. Well, the truth is that we can point you in directions and talk about principles. And the main principle we've been talking about here is that if you focus on blood sugars, you're not seeing the real problem. As I've said so many times, it's like putting a Band-Aid over the oil light in your car and pretending it's not going off. You have to look at, not have to, you can do whatever you want, but people who get better look at the big picture and remember that the body is doing what it does for a reason and ask, what is it that it needs? So we're going to offer some suggestions out of our practice, but this is by no means a complete list of what you can do in this situation. People are extremely individual, and there is no one suggestion. People tend to attach when they hear some of these shows to one thing that I said, one nutrient or one, and that's not what we're trying to do. We're talking about the general problem. Now, we've already talked about drugs and why they make things worse. They also don't treat the problem, and the studies show that it not only doesn't work long term, but too much blood sugar lowering is a problem too. So you don't force the body to do something it's not prepared to do. You support it to do the right thing, and that means changing the metabolism. So treating the thyroid and the hormone imbalances, watching out for dietary styles which rely on heavy carbohydrate and starch and sugar. If you're craving starch and sugar, you're not eating enough protein and you're not getting enough fat in your diet. It's good quality, undamaged, organic-based, not highly refined, not fake fats. Don't skip meals. Don't eat late. Don't go to bed. Don't eat right before bed and go to bed. This is just not a happy moment for your energy metabolism at all. And it'll interrupt your sleep, which makes you more prone to get high blood sugars. It's a stress. So the people who get these problems are very often people who will not stop. People who have to be in touch. These are the people who you can't reach on their cell phones. I mean, that was the whole point of cell phones, I thought, was to be. And you can't reach them because they're always on it. Type A. sometimes they're not exercising or they're doing too much exercise. They go to bed very late. Exercise, 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 exercise. It retrains your energy metabolism. It changes your body composition so that you begin to get, if you have a little bit of fat on your body and you need to have some, it's distributed all over your body. Your muscle to fat ratio changes in favor of muscle, which is active tissue, which burns fat as fuel, which protects you from high blood sugars. Relaxing. Relaxing, exercise and relaxation. Now, I know that people are under, I know people have yes buts, but I'm telling you that just like the fourth law of ecology, that nature bats last, your body has the last word in this. And you can't, you can argue with me, you can argue with Jeffrey, you can come and see us and have big arguments with us about what to do. But all we're trying to say is that if you're trying to get across a body of water, you can swim or you can row. And if you're not willing to do those things, then you have to sit and be quiet with yourself and think about what you're willing to do to make a good relationship with the body that you have and what it's asking for. So, starch-free diets, more fat, no sugar, and no sweeteners. Not artificial sweeteners, which are poisons, and there have been several articles about Splenda and the chlorine that's in it, and about aspartame and the amino acids that are excitatory, which don't exist in nature together, which are together in this thing. That's one problem. Then they produce a lot of methyl alcohol, which in low amounts appears normally in food, does not appear in high amounts, and is a brain poison, very addictive, and doesn't lower blood sugars. Doesn't lower blood sugars. Your body still says, oh, sugar. And now we've just found out that agave sweetener has as much sort of, what is the term?
Oh, agave, so-called nectar, is essentially high fructose corn syrup. In fact, it's even more highly concentrated in terms of fructose, but it's fructose.
But it's not made from corn. It's just a high,
it's not made from corn.
It's just a very rich fructose.
It's made from the agave root, and it is as highly processed as high fructose corn syrup.
Terrible for you.
And it also, it has the added benefit of having a toxin in it.
Isn't that nice?
Yeah, saponin. Isn't that nice?
What is it called?
Saponin. S-A-P-O-N-I-N.
Yeah, and Sally Fallon writes about this, so yeah. Wise Traditions, or she's at the Weston A. Price.
Yeah.
So that's westonaprice.org?
Yeah.
Okay. So no sweeteners. The only sweetener that we know of that will not interrupt your blood sugars is stevia. And stevia has a funny taste for people. Some people don't mind it, but if you're going to use something, that's all you can use. But it's really better to just get used to the things not tasting sweet. You will if you eat. If you stop eating, it takes about 2 or 3 weeks and maybe about a year later where you turn around and go, wow, I don't care anymore. Eating enough protein, eating enough fat, getting your carbohydrates from vegetables and maybe nuts instead of from starches. So that means, well, you know what starches are, all the fun foods. So all the grains and the flours and the rice and the potatoes and all that, unless you're a very thin person who doesn't need to worry about your energy metabolism. People who tend to get diabetes and energy metabolism disruptions are helped dramatically by vitamin D. And unless you're getting 15 minutes to half an hour of sun every day during 12 and 2 on your skin, depending on how dark your skin is, darker skin, longer exposure needed, you're not getting enough vitamin D. Without vitamin D, you're much more prone to get diabetes, so between 1,000 to upwards of 4,000, depending on your situation. Vitamin K, dark leafy greens, or take it in vitamins, vitamin C and all your other antioxidants and fat solubles, A and E, you have to make glutathione. Your body has to be able to detoxify. It needs boosting, so you can take alpha-lipoic acid, trimethylglycine, all the sulfur-containing amino acids, which are in animal protein. If you can't get them into you in other ways, then take them in capsules. B12, folate boosts metabolism. Mitochondria and heart function have to be supported. Magnesium, very important to reducing blood pressure. CoQ10 and carnitine and arginine are good for energy metabolism and for your mitochondria. You need to protect your tissues. So you've got biotin, you've got omega-3 fish oils. You don't want to use flaxseed oil with diabetes. People with diabetes, that diagnosis in their families or themselves, will not convert the oleic acid, the fat in flax and other vegetable source, into long chain omega 3 fatty acids. Only fish will work for you. And then we have this new supplement, resveratrol. And lest it sounds like we're doing an ad for resveratrol, Jeffrey, you did some reading about it. Do you want to give us a little information on how that works?
Well, the Cliff Notes version of what I've been seeing in the research is that resveratrol selectively promotes uptake of glucose in muscle and liver, and suppresses it in tissues that use another enzyme system for doing it. So that's why it's being used in cancer research, because it reduces the interest in cancer research. It reduces this enzyme system, so it makes it harder for cancer cells to get fueled. But it also reduces the sugar uptake in brain cells, which immediately you might think, oh no. But if you remember the AGEs, if you have too much sugar, you get amyloid plaques. So it works in this kind of up and down way to reduce the risk of developing those glycated proteins in your brain.
Resveratrol is from red grapes, but if you eat as much red grapes as you would need to take to have this kind of a profound effect from taking the I don't normally like nutraceuticals, but this is a good one. This is very concentrated, and the whole thing about red wine, you know, you'd have to drink an awful lot of wine, and wine is alcohol sugars are sugars, and they can disrupt your metabolism as well. They kind of paralyze your liver. So what did we say? We said don't concentrate on the blood sugars. Look at your symptoms in an overall way as an energy metabolism disruption. The best way to change your energy metabolism is to have a nutrient-rich diet that is low in starch and sugar, dissuades sweeteners, exercise however you can with enough recovery built in so that you're recovering from it, so training into it. And if you need help with this, you need help. We see people in our practice all the time with these syndromes. These are all really treatable things. This is really just people doing the best they can to take care of themselves during stressful times without enough essential information about how their body works to maintain good balance. So sometimes you need some help. It's a good idea to get some help and support. As I said, we see this a lot in our practice. We work with this a lot and with fabulous results. So eminently treatable. Don't be disheartened if your doctor suddenly discovers that your blood sugar is an unch over 100. Just stop and think about the fact that you're having some kind of lack of recovery or stress response, and look at how you can change your diet, your nutrient density, and your exercise regimes so that you can avoid all those nasty downstream effects of a disrupted energy metabolism. In the extreme, you've got the heart disease, the high triglycerides, the cancer from the high insulin, the problems with the eyes and the kidneys and the nerve endings, inflammation and hormone imbalances. These can all be corrected, but you look to the body for its native resource of how it wants to be balanced, and then you mimic it, but it does require attention. And so not to ignore the blood sugars, but to understand them as a signal. So I want to thank you all for listening. I'm Lena Berman. There's information about your own health and fitness, our guests, our practice, a free stream of this week's show, how to get CD copies, and lots more at yourownhealthandfitness.org. Our information number is 707-874-2772. Your Own Health and Fitness is produced by Lena Berman and Dr. Jeffrey Fawcett. Remember, being informed not only protects your health, it protects your freedom.